Easy come, easy go. Applies to regulation, too. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. While most of Congress's attention is on health care this morning, a bill is on the move to kill off protections meant to keep your internet browsing private from certain companies. The Senate voted yesterday to put a stop to Obama administration privacy rules that would prevent internet providers like Comcast and Verizon from collecting and selling your browsing habits. Marketplace's Mark Garrison joins us.
Good morning, Sabri.
So explain what the rules were supposed to do.
Okay, so it kind of gets back to that opt-in, opt-out thing we talk about sometimes. Late in the Obama administration, they put in regulations that said internet providers could not sell your browsing habits, personal information without your permission. You had to opt in. Those rules were not yet in effect. So if this bill moves ahead, becomes law, they will never be enforced and it will become opt-out. So the internet providers, they can sell your data unless you tell them they can't. Obviously, privacy advocates don't like that. Cable, phone, ad industry, therefore getting rid of the rules because they say they were too complicated, weren't necessary when people could always just opt out.
So where does this fit into the bigger picture about online privacy?
Well, you and a good portion of the planet are already having your personal data harvested in some way because you're using Google or you're on Facebook. I do know this because we're Facebook friends and you posted about how you liked Logan. So Facebook presumably has scooped that up. They can sell you ads for the next X-Men movie or whatever Hugh Jackman does after he gets a haircut. Or they've seen that you went to Morocco via your Instagram. They can send you travel deals. The rules we're talking about don't cover Google or Facebook, anything we're talking about there as far as search and social. So that's another reason the internet providers didn't like this rule because they say it put them at a disadvantage to those other companies. Now, down the road, we could get the same kinds of targeted ads from the cable companies and phone companies that give us our internet if the Republicans get rid of this rule, which is expected.
Okay, Marketplace's Mark Garrison, thank you.
You're welcome.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.2%, but the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up in the 0.1% to 0.2% range. These days, you can use your phone to do everything from take your pulse to calculate your altitude above sea level. So why not use it to withdraw cash from an ATM? Starting on Monday, customers of Wells Fargo nationwide will be able to start making ATM withdrawals using just their smartphones. No ATM card required. Marketplace's Adam Allington has more.
The way it works is you log onto the Wells Fargo app, request an 8-digit code, good for 30 minutes, and then use that code along with your PIN to withdraw cash.
We have strong protocols around authorizing new mobile devices. Customers have to sign into the application with their passcode.
Jonathan Villeen is head of ATM banking for Wells Fargo. He says the cardless method is more secure since it also guards against skimming, where thieves use hidden devices to copy information from the card's magnetic strip.
Since the card's not going into the ATM, there's no one able to steal the customer's credentials.
More people today are used to mobile banking, says Greg McBride, an analyst with the finance website Bankrate.com.
Within a few years, you're going to see many more financial institutions offering ATM access, you know, through cardless technology. And it's something that's going to be the norm some period from now. I mean, our kids are certainly never going to use ATM cards.
For now, though, Wells Fargo users will still need their cards to access ATMs after hours. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
The U.S. as a population is getting older, and so is the federal government's tech workforce. As these IT workers retire, it poses a particular problem for the government because they could be hard to replace. Turns out the federal bureaucracy is no magnet for young tech workers. And this, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains, may affect your computer screen.
Daniel Castro is noodling around on some of the federal government's websites.
All right, we're at irs.gov.
Castro is vice president of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, a tech think tank. The foundation analyzed almost 300 of the most popular federal websites, looking at things like the site's security and speed, and whether they're mobile-friendly and accessible for the disabled. Castro says they found,
of those, you know, approximately 300 sites, 92% of them failed at least one of these core benchmarks.
It doesn't help that some of the underlying government computer systems are more than 50 years old, with graying federal tech workers helping them limp along. Just how gray is the federal IT workforce? Max Steyer, president of the Partnership for Public Service, says,
we now have almost five times as many people over the age of 60 as under the age of 30.
And a large number of those aging federal IT workers could decide to retire any time. They'll be hard to replace. The federal government can't pay as much as Silicon Valley giants competing for the same talent. The federal hiring process is complicated and slow. And then there's President Trump's temporary hiring freeze. Steyer says it sends the wrong message.
People have questions. They assume that the government can't be hiring people and therefore there aren't opportunities for them.
But here's the thing. Young tech hotshots believe in public service, says Andrew McMahon. He recruited tech workers for the Obama White House. McMahon says the clunky federal hiring process discourages techies who would love the challenge of overhauling the government's computer systems.
That would absolutely attract thousands of individuals from across the country to come work for the federal government on that problem.
McMahon says some of the tech fellows were so eager to work in Washington, they made the ultimate sacrifice, swapping their hoodies for a suit and tie. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for
Marketplace. And finally, Theranos, the blood testing company. It's been struggling with accusations, investigations, and lawsuits over its technology. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the company plans to give away free shares to investors if they pledge not to sue the company. I'm sure they're trying to help, but that really just does not look good. It's like, here, you get an extra cheeseburger if you promise not to ask for a refund when you find a hair in it. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.